Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud. This is Lee Wilkins, your co-host, and this week we're going to talk about waste minimization, otherwise known as recycling, in Colombia. With me in the studio is Ben Kreitzner. He is the coordinator for waste minimization for the City of Colombia. And we're going to begin by talking a little bit about what recycling in Colombia looks like, and then we're going to delve into some of the new wrinkles in what recycling is all about, particularly for those of us who've been recycling for a lot of years. There are some changes we need to be aware of. So, Ben, welcome, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So first off, talk a little bit about how much we recycle in Colombia. I know as a community, we like to think that we do it well and we do a lot of it. And some of those numbers may or may not sort of validate that view.
Right. So it's difficult to get a full picture on what the participation rate is. But we do know that a lot of people do recycle in Colombia. As far as when you compare it to the amount of waste going to the landfill, then it makes it look smaller. So the calculation is difficult, and it's never quite the full picture, but we always try to strive for those numbers.
Okay, and at least the numbers that I've heard is we're at about 22%, which seems awfully low considering, I think, what some of us try to think we're contributing.
Right, so the recycling rate, it's really based on the total amount of waste generated compared to the amount that's being recycled, and it's all based on weight. So it doesn't matter if you have one person recycling on your street or everyone recycles, it could be a very different outcome as far as what the actual weight of that material is. So we also look at the volume, which is often very different from the weight, especially when you have food waste and with the trash. That often weighs a lot more than it does have as far as volume goes. So right now, we do estimate it's in the low 20% range for recycling in residential properties. Of course, that's different in commercial, and it's different for industrial. And then you try and look at the city as a whole, and it gets even more complicated. So we're still trying to work on those numbers.
So if we were doing really well, let's just talk initially about residential stuff. What would be an optimal thing that we would be trying to aim at? If it's not in the low 20s, should we be going for the high 20s or the low 30s? Or should we just give it all up and throw ourselves in the trash? Or what should we do?
Well, the important thing to remember is that you cannot get 100% recycling rate. Not everything is recyclable. A lot of times it could be recycled in other parts of the country because there's a market for that material, but not necessarily in Missouri or even central Missouri. So that's when you look at not the recycling rate, but the capture rate. So out of all the material that you do dispose, how much of it could have been recycled as opposed to just looking at the total waste generated. So we're actually working on a study with that for multifamily homes, so apartment complexes. We hope to get some data on the capture rate rather than just the recycling rate in the next few months here.
I'm assuming that Colombia is also a little bit different because we have a big student population, which means we do have a lot of multifamily dwellings, apartment dwellings, dare I say, at the dorm, in addition to the more traditional, you know, residential place. How does the fact that we have so many students in town change that? Because on the one hand, students like to recycle, and I think many of them try to. And on the other hand, they're incredibly careless with their belongings and leave entire sofas out on the curb. So how does all of that work out for Colombia?
Right. We do have a very fluid population, which in some ways that works to our advantage. We get a younger population that's sometimes more willing to try new things, but often trying to educate that population is the greatest challenge. Oftentimes we would try emails, we would try mailbox, snail mail, flyers on walls. A lot of those don't work. Right now we're experimenting with social media, so we've just started launching some Facebook ads and Instagram ads, and we're going to see what the results are from those. But mostly education is the biggest challenge when it comes to multifamily homes. You can't just educate them once, you have to educate them every single year, and sometimes even more frequently if they just stay for 6 months or just for a summer. So it's a very ongoing, continuous process.
Does the fact that your neighbors recycle help any of that? I mean, do we do social comparison about recycling like we do a lot of other things? You know, my neighbor made me do it, kind of an approach?
Yes, we do actually see that. And a lot of our collection workers would tell you that they would go down some neighborhoods and there would be a lot of recycling on the street curb, and then other streets just down around the corner, there would be no recycling at all. So just that perception of seeing what your neighbors are doing, a lot of times that would spur questions like, how did you get those blue recycling bags? Or is it actually being recycled? Is there even a truck that comes by for recycling? Some residents don't even realize that we offer recycling to all residential properties.
So I've been recycling for a long time and have been through several iterations of it. And when, at least where I was living when it first started, the goal was to reduce the amount of stuff that we put in the landfill, with the long-term goal of decreasing our need for landfills, period. Is that still part or the primary goal of where we're headed, or has it gotten a lot more expansive and complicated?
Now, looking at the big picture, the end goal is basically a circular economy. So the conventional way is a linear economy where you extract resources from the environment, you process, manufacture, distribute, and then it eventually makes its way to the consumer. But then it goes straight into a landfill, and then the process starts over again. So obviously we cannot keep going down that same route forever. Some resources are renewable and some are not. So then what we're looking at is a circular economy, whereas once the consumer is done with that product, it either gets reused, repurposed, or gets recycled into another product. And the cycle starts over, not from the very beginning where you extract the resource from the environment, but it goes straight back to the processor or the manufacturer.
And so of that sort of that circular economy, at least for me, it started with two things, glass and paper. And I can remember a time when you had to separate the kinds of glass that you had based on the color it was. Now, at least, so now I'm going to find out whether I'm doing the right thing or not. Now, at least, we kind of throw it all together along with some other things. How does all of that change what we do, or how we as consumers of various things should think about recycling?
Well, the important thing to remember is that technology does advance over time. If you learned what can and cannot be recycled or how to prepare it even 3 or 4 years ago, it could be entirely different today. So that's why education has always been a challenge with recycling, because it's always evolving. In the past, you might have had to separate different colored plastics, different colored glass, different numbered plastics, cut out the plastic window and an envelope that you get in the mail. All these little things that were just enough to convince people not to recycle, just a little too much extra effort to participate. Now it's become simpler, not quite to the extent of some cities where they throw all their recycling into one bin. That's actually had some backlash because a lot of that material gets so contaminated and more difficult to sort when you have everything in one bin. In Columbia, we still have the dual stream recycling system. So we have our mixed fiber, which is any kind of paper product, and then the other category is mixed containers. So that's your plastic, aluminum, glass, metal food cans. All of those could be bunched together. But as far as separating the different colors of glass, the different numbers of plastic, the consumer does not need to do that.
So one of the things I do at my house is when we have like a can that we recycle, I wash it out first and then throw it in the recycling tub. And I'm not sure that I'm supposed to be doing that anymore, or if that's even necessary anymore. So you said it changes every 3 or 4 years. So let's assume I've been doing this for longer than 3 or 4 years. What are some of the changes that I should be aware of?
Another change that I failed to mention that last part, even though it changes frequently for Columbia, at any given point, it could be different in Columbia compared to the neighboring community. So that's where the fluid population comes in. Where we have a lot of residents that came in from St. Louis or Chicago or Kansas City, what can and cannot be recycled there and how you prepare it there is different from over here. So as far as re-educating yourself, I always recommend to go to the city website. If not the city website, try to find who your provider is for collecting material. In Columbia, it's all done by the city, but if you live in a different community, it might be from a private company, or it could be 4 or 5 private companies collecting recycling from one street. So it gets really complicated when you have a lot of different providers. But for Columbia in particular, just go on the city website or download our phone app, Como Recycle and Trash. There are many different ways to figure out what can and cannot be recycled.
So for people who are just listening and may not have the app or may not want to go to the website because, you know, that's yet one more step before you can recycle. You don't have to separate glass. You obviously don't have to separate other kinds of containers. What are some things that maybe we have been doing that we no longer need to do or maybe some new habits that we need to pick up?
So one of the common ones that we always hear is removing the cap from a plastic bottle or a plastic lid from a plastic tub.
Like a milk jug or something like that?
Right. So that could actually be kept onto attached to the bottle or tub. Now, if you separate it, the plastic bottle or tub is going to get recycled, but the cap would not get recycled. But if you attach them, even if they're different numbered plastics, they could still be recycled together. Because basically, when we sell that plastic to a factory or manufacturer, they would grind it up into little grains of sand, basically. And there are different ways of sorting it from there. They could separate it by buoyancy. So a different number of plastic is at a different level in the water column compared to another. But basically, that's a way to ensure that all of that plastic that you are disposing is recycled, whereas if it's detached, it doesn't necessarily mean that the cap will be recycled.
And the little numbers on the bottom or sides of things with the little triangle. I've lived in places where you had to pay really close attention to those numbers. And I think there was a time in Columbia when you did too. But now when I go look for that, what am I looking for? And what's the cue to, no, you can't recycle this, or yes, you can?
So that's another recent change. In 2015, we expanded the recycling program. So instead of only accepting number one and number two plastics, we now accept all plastics, 1 through 7, except for 2 exceptions, and that would be styrofoam or any kind of plastic film. Now, plastic film would be anything that's really flexible, does not have a fixed shape to it, so like a plastic shopping bag, a shower curtain, bubble wrap, a dry cleaning bag, anything that's really flexible like that. Sometimes the way we would phrase it is we accept any rigid plastics. So if it has a rigid shape to it, then it can be recyclable. And what that also means is if you could identify styrofoam and plastic film, the 2 exceptions, you could recycle any other plastic. You do not need to look for the number. You do not need to look for a recycling symbol. It could still be recycled.
Okay, so that in some ways that makes it easier. Now, one of the things when I was being told about this is if there's a plastic film on a cup, so the example that was given to me was, can you recycle your Starbucks cup? And I guess the answer to that is, even though it looks like paper, it's really not.
Right, so that's the same for paper cups or paper plates. Those are all not just paper. If they were, as soon as you put your coffee in, it'll fall right apart. So it's actually a blend of paper and plastic. Now they're starting to, Starbucks in particular, is investing a lot of money into engineering a recyclable cup that could be used for coffee. And there is a new factory up in Wisconsin that could actually accept coffee cups. So that's another case where technology is slowly starting to change. Of course, we would prefer a reusable cup among all other things, even if we do find a recyclable option. But that's another route that they're looking towards.
So when I'm thinking about, so I can recycle a lot of my plastics without having to do investigating and reading the bottom and trying to find the little recycling symbol. I can't recycle styrofoam and Starbucks cups. And apparently now a lot of the things that I've been using for tailgating, because they're not just paper, they're paper and plastic together. On the other side of the thing, we talked a little bit about what I call paper waste. And one of the things you said is the little plastic, see-through window that comes on envelopes at my house. We spend a lot of time taking those out and disposing of them some other way. If I heard you right, I can now leave those on the envelopes and not worry that I'm contaminating the recycling.
Correct. So when we send that to the paper mill, they now have a special screener that could take out those little plastic windows. Same way is true with cardboard boxes. You don't need to take off the shipping label or all the duct tape or packaging tape. You could just recycle it as it is. Now, you might still choose to possibly darken out your address or name with a Sharpie. Of course, that's not required for us to recycle it, but it could be for your own benefit.
So when we say paper, I know that uncovers a lot of things. So you've already said cardboard. I'm assuming newspaper, paper that office paper or things like that. What else is included in that, giant bucket of recycling that we call paper products?
Sure. The mixed fiber recycling would include any kind of cardboard, office paper, newspaper, magazines, basically anything that comes in the mailbox. But if you get any of those credit cards that they're trying to get you to activate, please take those plastic credit cards out. Otherwise, also chipboard. So a lot of people think that cereal boxes and granola bar boxes are cardboard. We actually need to separate that from cardboard. That's a different material, but it's still recyclable. Same way with any kind of plastic sleeve for a cereal box. Take out the plastic sleeve. That's not recyclable.
So you said initially, or not initially, but you said some of this is by weight. So I guess one way of looking at this is, are we recycling more weight than we used to in Columbia, or is it pretty much steady state? I mean, how do we sort of evaluate if we're making any progress here, assuming that progress is doing more of something rather than keeping steady state?
So this is where it gets really challenging, because the weight of material is actually decreasing over time. So I believe there was one statistic where the weight of a plastic water bottle has decreased 40% in the past 10 to 15 years. And that's mostly by design, because they want to reduce the weight of the packaging material, and then they could save money on shipping costs. Or they might change the shape of that material so that they could package it more tightly in a shipment. So a lot of the things that could be recycled, even though we still measure it by weight, the weight is actually decreasing over time. So we could say, hypothetically, we recycle the exact same number of bottles and cans as we did the previous year, but it would look like we recycled less, because it's based on weight and that material's getting less heavy.
So how does it look for Columbia? Say, like, I know you told me before we went on air that you've been here for 3 years. So over the 3 years that you've been here, how does that look just in terms of weight, what we're doing?
I have been going through the historical data a lot, going back to the late 1980s. I have some student interns at the university helping with that. And it looks like, well, the recycling rate for commercial and residential are both improving over time. The commercial recycling rate is improving faster, although it was lower at the baseline. So residential recycling is actually higher than commercial, but we expect commercial to pass that up in the near future.
Okay. And in terms of weight, or maybe the other thing is, I guess, are we filling up the landfill any less quickly than we were, say, 3 to 5 years ago? Or do we have to go find more landfill?
So even though we're recycling more, we're also throwing away more, especially in recent years. You'll notice if you look through the historical data that we have for the landfill, it follows the economy. So if the economy is doing really well, the amount of material going in the landfill increases. And it's not necessarily a factor of how much it costs to recycle, more so just people buying more material and therefore disposing more.
Okay. On the other side, so I recycle. I take my stuff to one of the various city locations, which are often overflowing when I get there. But nonetheless, I get my stuff in. The city picks it up. And then what happens with it?
So the city of Columbia, we do a lot of the hauling for recycling. So we collect the material from a recycling drop-off center, a business, or a residential home. And then it goes to our facility that's actually located right next to the landfill. So we get a lot of complaints, well, our recycling is going to the landfill anyway. It takes a right-hand turn right before the landfill and goes to what we call the material recovery facility, since we are recovering the materials. And then what the city staff do is we actually sort the material into marketable categories. So number one, plastics has its own market. Number two, plastics has another market. Newspaper we separate and sell separately. cardboard. So we separate into all these different categories, and most of it's sorted by hand, actually. So for mixed fiber, you have one conveyor line and about five or six employees up there on the conveyor line, and they'll pull out the cardboard, they'll pull out the newspaper, the office paper, and same is true for the other conveyor line on the other side of the building, which is for your mixed containers. And they're actually picking up the water bottles, the number one plastics, and the number two plastics, your milk jugs and laundry detergent bottles. And then three through seven plastics we bunch together. They're very low value. And in fact, a lot of times it's even hard to sell it on the market, but it's also a large volume. So we try to divert that from the landfill for the benefit of cost savings, because the landfill is not cheap at all. It costs a lot to build a landfill, maintain it, and it's a continuous cost over time. Whereas, at our recycling facility, we receive the material, we sort it, compress it into large bales, and it leaves our facility within about 4 to 6 weeks. So we have that short-term cost and then get some funds in return, as opposed to a continuous ongoing cost of a landfill.
I know that there's been some news lately about, at least in the U.S., I understand a lot of our recycling actually went to China. And at some point recently, the Chinese have decided that, among other things, our recycling is probably a little bit more contaminated. I think that's the word they've used, than they're comfortable with. So in the case of Colombia, when it takes that 4 to 6 weeks and it leaves, where does it go? And how does the city... I don't want to say make money on it, because my understanding is it's not a money-making proposition, but how does the city recoup some of what it's invested in this?
So the fact that we are located in the middle of the country often has its downsides. In this case, it's more of a benefit because we do not ship our material to China. So we're not directly affected from it, but we do have a lot of places on the West Coast that they typically sold their material to China because they have all these shipping containers of new products coming from China.
Right, and then they're empty. And
so you don't want to ship back empty containers. Might as well ship over another material, recycled products. Now that that process is starting to not happen as frequently, or it's becoming more stringent on the inspections, a lot of the recycled material on the West Coast is starting to look for markets on the East Coast and in the Midwest. So a lot of times recycling is mandatory on the West Coast, or at least it's required by a lot of businesses from their headquarters. So instead of selling the material to a factory, a lot of times they're giving it away for free or even paying them to take it, which takes away from our market, and then it eventually trickles down to us. But at this point, we still sell all of our recycled material in the U.S., a lot of times within the relative area, so eastern Illinois or Arkansas is where our cardboard goes. Newspaper goes to Rolla, Missouri, turns into paper egg cartons. Our aluminum goes down to Georgia. And then there was just last year we needed to ship our 3 through 7 plastics to Canada. That was just right on the border of the U.S., the 3 through 7 plastics are the ones that are hurt most from the Chinese restrictions. So we are struggling with that a little bit right now. We have about 11 truckloads sitting behind our facility of 3 through 7 plastics that we're just waiting to find a buyer for. So we're actively searching for someone to take those. But we do not ship anything overseas. We do not put it in the landfill if there's a drought for a few months. We just store it behind our building until the market picks up again.
And how is the market for these things? I didn't realize we were competing with our fellow citizens on the West Coast, who, you're right, you do a lot of mandatory recycling from that part of the country. So does that mean that the city is essentially getting less money than it once did, or are we not quite to that point yet?
Well, the recycling markets are very volatile, so it would look very well for a few weeks or a few months, But then all the facilities like ours, where we've stored that material behind the building until the market picks up again, it just floods the market again, and then the value of that material starts to drop again. So it's this real up and down process for each material type. Some are more stable than others, like aluminum's usually a reliable commodity. Usually cardboard is as well. But when you get into plastics, a lot of times glass, the value could really fluctuate.
And is it your responsibility to track these market fluctuations? I mean, somebody must do that. Is that something that your office does, or someone else in the city, or we read smoke screens, or what have you?
So we subscribe to a couple online websites that actually track the markets. So every month we get a new update on what the current prices are for each commodity. I do receive those numbers. I do not actually deal with the bidding process. We have a supervisor at our material recovery facility that looks at those more closely and tries to determine if we have four different bidders for our number one plastics, which one is more in line with what the market is and which one's more reliable, ensuring that it gets recycled and it doesn't go as far away.
And the reason we don't want it to go as far away is?
So the farther it gets from the point that it was created, so the farther it gets from central Missouri, basically, the less certain we are of what actually happens to it. So we want to ensure that it gets recycled, because a lot of times if you have larger companies, like over in St. Louis, you have Republic Services, they deal with a lot larger quantities, a lot larger volumes of material, and they're trying to sell it off as quickly as possible. And sometimes in that case, it would go to a broker, and then the broker transfers it to another person, and then eventually it trickles its way over to China or Malaysia. And we're trying to avoid that at all costs.
So it may be obvious to people who are listening, but I'm going to ask you, we're trying to avoid that at all costs because?
Because we're not just doing it for the Columbia area. It's not only for ensuring that the Columbia landfill does not fill up as quickly, or we need to expand it more frequently. This is more of supporting the greater good, not just in Columbia, but throughout the country. And the idea of us recycling only so that it could be thrown into a landfill overseas, or hopefully get recycled overseas where working conditions might not be optimal for those citizens, we're trying to ensure that we avoid that as much as we can.
So in some sense, this is for the planet and for the people on the planet as well, not just those in central Missouri.
Right. The recycling industry is a global industry, even though the education is very local. So it's really hard to educate the public on that even though it's really specific on where you live as far as what can and cannot be recycled and how it gets prepared. But the environmental benefits stretch out far beyond Missouri. You see a lot of videos of sea turtles in the ocean and the Pacific garbage patch, Great Barrier Reef, and all the plastic litter. It's very possible that some of that plastic came from Columbia, Missouri, either by litter that goes into Hinkson Creek or another creek, and then to Missouri River, and then to the Gulf of Mexico, or in some cases, unfortunately, we'd try recycling it, and you sometimes have debris that gets misplaced in that process as it gets transported. So we try to make sure that it gets to the right place and not as far away from Columbia as we can.
Talk to us a little bit about what you see in the future for this, not just of your job, but what are the things that you think might be on the horizon, either the different ways of recycling or I suppose I could eventually recycle my sofa, but it's probably not high on my list.
Well, there are a few things that we're looking forward to in Columbia. The Sustainability Office is working on a climate action and adaptation plan. And part of that, not only setting greenhouse gas emission goals all the way through 2050 or 2060, but also waste reduction goals. So the potential for being zero waste or even coming close to zero waste, or maybe expand the compost operation. And with that report that we're working on, we're also proposing an expansion of the recycling facility. That is part of the reason why we're not recycling more than what we currently do. Basically because as more materials are becoming recyclable, as in there's a market in the area that'll accept the material, we still cannot recycle it ourselves because there's not enough space in our facility. Basically, when our workers are on the conveyor line and sorting the material, there are different bunkers that they could throw that material into, and there are no extra ones. So milk cartons are a good example of this. Milk cartons that you would find in schools are Minute Maid juice cartons, any of those paper cartons that some people are like, oh, is this recyclable? Is it not? Currently, it's not recyclable in Colombia because, again, it's a layer of paper and then a layer of plastic. But there are factories now that are opening up. There's even one in Des Moines, Iowa, which is relatively close. And St. Louis is recycling them and taking them up there, and it turns into construction material. But basically, if we expanded the size of our facility, then we could start recycling that as well. And we're also looking at other types of material. So not just the conventional municipal waste, but also electronic waste. Mattresses are a big one that we're working on. And, of course, household hazardous waste. So your oil and fertilizers and
paint.
Paint is a big one as well. So we're hoping to expand our facility over at the landfill property. And hopefully it's not too far off into the future, but I do not have a timeline at this point.
So the report that you're working on, when do you hope that will be done, or project when that might be done?
So the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan is supposed to be ready in May or June of this year. City Council had already approved greenhouse gas emission goals in their council meeting last August, and that was 100% reduction of community greenhouse gas emissions by 2060, and 100% municipal emission reduction by 2050. So we set slightly higher standard for municipal operations because we believe we could tackle those a lot sooner. Now, once that's complete, then we're completing a RFP, a request for proposals for a consultant to basically design a more modern-looking and larger recycling facility. So instead of having everything sorted manually, maybe we'll add in some automated equipment as well. It really wouldn't take away from the jobs. It would basically switch employees from working manual labor bent over a conveyor line and switched over to more technical work, actually repairing and maintaining that equipment.
The one other thing that you brought up that I know that is a problem for a lot of people is what I at least call e-waste, or my old Kindle, my old computer, my old television, if we're calling it that. What are the things that the city is doing regarding e-waste? I know at some places there's actually a day or 2 days a year where you can bring it in and the city or the county, wherever, will take it from there.
Right. We do have electronic waste drives about once a year, the city does. It's actually more so conducted by a state group. It's called the Mid-Missouri Solid Waste Management District. The entire state of Missouri is separated into these districts, and anytime we throw something into a landfill in Missouri, it's taxed, and it goes towards these districts. And they would fund any kind of waste diversion project. They also offer grants that has to relate to waste diversion. But anyway, they provide once a year a collection day, basically, that's more focused towards household hazardous waste. But it could also include electronic waste. Sometimes they take tires. And that usually happens around June, early June. Aside from that, the university a lot of times would host a electronic waste drive. But even aside from those, instead of waiting around for the next event, there are still places to drop off your electronic waste any day of the week, any time of the day. We have Minmo Recycling, which is a private recycler in the north end of town. They basically have a collection bin in their parking lot, and you could go there any time of the day and drop off your keyboard, your computer monitor. As long as it's a flat screen, they do not take the older CRT monitors, the really mm-hmm. large ones. But basically any kind of electronic you could drop off there. Hopefully, as we expand our recycling facility, we would have a lot larger operation where we could actually do collections or have more drop-off points, kind of like we would do with other recycling. We have about 12 recycling centers in town. Maybe have an electronic waste bin as well.
And do you see that as something that's might come along, what, in the next year or two or the next five? Or I'm getting progressively angrier at my computer, so I may want to contribute sooner rather than later.
Right. So if you have any kind of electronic waste right now, your best option is to take it to Midmo Recycling. And I believe that's along Brown Station Road. So if you go off Paris Road and keep going north towards Centralia, it's right along there.
So I think we've gotten through most of at least the current and a little bit of the future of Recycling Columbia. Ben, thank you. Thank you so much for coming. And we appreciate you thinking out loud with us about this important issue.
Sure. Thank you.